that moves us to, and thank you for staying here for so long, our assistant superintendents, and for that. We were going to move to our study session. We have two trainings we're going to be doing that are required annually. So we will start with our Utah Open and Public Meetings Act, our OPMA training. And it looks like that is AAG Beal. You're up. Yep, come on up. Oh, I do need to, I apologize. My apologies. We need to adjourn our USDB meeting and move back to our board meeting. Thank you. All right, whenever you are ready.
Okay, so today we are doing our OPMA training. You're having this training because the state requires us to do OPMA training, or really it requires your presiding officer to ensure that you have OPMA training once a year. So this is Chair Hymas's obligation that we do this. Okay, so what is OPMA? OPMA is the Open and Public Meetings Act. It ensures that the public's business is done in public, and it requires that we take actions openly and conduct deliberations openly. So a public body is an administrative, advisory, executive, or legislative body of the state or its political subdivision. There's kind of the four categories there under it. You have to have more than two individuals, created by Utah Constitution, statute, rule, or resolution. The Board of Education fits within this definition. There are several exemptions as to what is not a political or a public body. One of those exemptions is a political caucus. And additionally, your standing committee meetings are not public bodies, as they're not vested with the authority to make decisions regarding the public's business. So what is a meeting? A meeting is the gathering of your body with a quorum present. So a simple majority for your board, that's 8, convened by individual with authority to convene it. So the chair, for the purpose of receiving public comment, deliberating about a relevant matter, or taking action on a relevant matter. So a meeting is not if several of you are getting together for lunch and you're talking about where you're going on vacation. Not a meeting, since it has nothing to do with taking action or deliberating about relevant matters. So just to go further into that, a matter is within the scope of the authority of the public body. So if the body has executive and legislative responsibilities, which this board does, then it does not include, but it does not include managerial or operational matters. So notice, OPMA requires that prior to holding a meeting, the board must give notice to the public. The notice must be provided at least 24 hours in advance, and it has to include an agenda, a date, a time, and a place. Additionally, for bodies such as this board that hold regularly scheduled meetings over the course of the year, public notice has to be given at least once per year for the annual schedule. And this notice must include the date, time, place of each meetings. And then the individual ones have to include the agendas. So where the notice has to be given, it has to be posted at the meeting location. So that's why you'll always see it in the entry hall over here on the state's public notice website. And it's also encouraged to be posted electronically on the body's own website, which the board does by using Civic Clerk. Agenda. So the agenda is required to be published as a part of the notice and must contain each topic that will be discussed at the meeting. The topics should be described with reasonable specificity to notify the public as to which topics you're going to be considering. The body may not take final action unless a topic is properly listed in the public notice and agenda. Exception. So at the discretion of the presiding officer, a topic that is raised by the public can be discussed, but action can't be taken on it. There's an exception to the notice requirement in the event of a need for an emergency meeting of the body. In the case of unforeseen circumstances of an emergency or urgent nature, the body must give best practicable notice of time, place, and topics, attempt to notify all members of the body, and a majority of members must approve the meeting. Okay, so the record of meetings. As a board, you're required to have written minutes and a recording of all open portions of your meeting. The approved written minutes are the official record of your board meetings. Both the written minutes and the recordings of the open portion meetings are public records, and therefore they're subject to grandma. So the written minutes have to contain the date, time, place, names of the members who are present and absent, substance of all the matters proposed, discussed, decided upon, and the names of those providing testimony or comments, and substance, and all other information that a member requests. So a copy of the draft or pending minutes must be made available within 30 days of the meeting, and minutes don't become approved or official until they have been voted on by the board, which is why you always vote on them the following month. Once the board has approved the minutes, then they must be made available to the public within 3 business days. And the approved minutes have to be posted to the state website, as well as being made available here at the USBE office and on our website. The recording of the open portions of your meetings have to be complete, unedited record of all open portions, and it must be made available to the public within 3 business days of a meeting. Electronic meetings can happen where some or all of the members of the body participate electronically. In order to hold electronic meetings, the body must have a resolution, rule, or ordinance governing electronic meetings, which you guys do in R277-101, subsection 4, authorizes you to hold your meetings electronically. Additionally, your bylaws address member participation electronically in meetings. The bylaws state that a member may participate in any discussion and vote in an open meeting if the member is participating in real time electronically, but they also state that a member may not participate in the closed portion of the meeting when the meeting is held in person. Okay, do you have to have a physical anchor location for the public to attend? So not if all the members of the public body attend electronically, with the exception being the body must provide an anchor location if it receives a written request at least 12 hours before the start of the meeting. The body may provide the public an electronic attendance link for the public. And electronic meetings may be held without an anchor location, even if you do receive a request 12 hours in advance, if it presents a substantial risk to health or safety. And this requires a written determination by the chair. Okay. So closed meetings. A closed meeting can be held if the closed session, which the board generally refers to as an executive session, is called for during an open meeting, a quorum is present, 2/3 of the member present at the open meeting vote to approve the closing of the meeting, and the topics to be discussed must fit within the statutorily approved purposes of a closed meeting. So OTMA provides a pretty extensive specific list of what can be discussed in closed meeting. The ones that apply most frequently to this board are character and professional competence or physical or mental health of an individual, pending or reasonably imminent litigation, deployment of security personnel, devices, or systems. And then it also includes things like strategy sessions to discuss collective bargaining, purchase, exchange, lease, sale of real property, or things where the board is acting as an evaluation committee, protest officer, or procurement appeals panel. But we don't use those ones very often. In a closed meeting, the board may not take a vote except to end the closed session and return to the open meeting, which requires a majority of those present. And the board may not approve a rule, regulation, contract, or appointment in closed meeting. So records must be kept of certain portions of the closed meeting. Recordings are required to be made except for personnel, so character, competence, mental, physical health of individuals, and safety and security discussions don't have to be recorded, but the rest of closed session does. And the body may, but is not required to take minutes in closed session. And any recording of or minutes of a closed session are protected under Grandma. Okay, disruption of meetings. OTMA doesn't prohibit the removal of a person from the meeting if that person willfully disrupts the meeting to the extent that orderly conduct is seriously compromised. Does not prohibit, yeah, the removal. Double negative. You can remove them if it's they're really out of hand. Violations of OTMA. So the public can file if they believe there's been a violation of the Open and Public Meetings Act. A person who's been denied a right by an action that is alleged to have been taken in violation of OTMA can sue to compel compliance with the law or to enjoin actions taken in violation, which basically means to stop them. A lawsuit generally has to be filed within 90 days of the violation. And sometimes violations can be cured by discussing and taking a subsequent vote to ratify the decision that was made in violation of OTMA. The body who violates OTMA may have to pay court costs and attorney's fees. And finally, there's a special criminal penalty for violations that reads, in addition to any other penalty under this chapter, a member of a public body who intentionally violates or intentionally abets or advises in violation of the closed meeting provisions is guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. So in summary, you have to give 24-hour notice. The board has to be pretty specific with agenda items. We close meetings only as allowed by statutory purposes and follow the process outlined in the law. We have to provide minutes and recordings in a timely manner. So we always ratify them the next meeting, get them posted within 3 days. So advice has been don't text or email each other during meetings because business that's being discussed should be discussed on the record and openly. And you have to receive this training once a year. And advice is always just to err on the side of transparency and do all your business in the public. Any questions?
Well, I'm not seeing lights on, but they can turn their lights on. That was not intentional, by the way. Do we have any questions? Okay, do we have any questions online? I don't see any hands online.
I'm texting my questions.
Yeah, no texting your questions. All right, thank you, AAG Bill. We appreciate it. All right, we will invite our grandma officer, Ben Rasmussen, up to give us our Government Records Access and Management Act or our grandma training. The time is yours. We'll let you hook up. looks like our staff has left the room. Oh, we'll have to grab a microphone. 1 second.
Okay, there we go. It's good to be with you this afternoon. So, Government Records Access and Management Act. Grandma is based on two constitutional rights. It was based to balance the public right of access to information and counterbalance that with the right of privacy in certain records. And so that's what Grandma attempts, the line Grandma attempts to walk. When it was passed, the legislative intent, if you look at it, highly favors access to public records by the general public. Easy and reasonable access to unrestricted public records, prevent abuse of confidentiality, and favors public access whenever there's countervailing interests of equal weight. So that's when you see appeals go up to the courts and to what has been the Records Committee before, but is now the records officer, those are generally always favoring the public over the government agency where possible. So the rules of Grandma are that every person has the right to inspect a public record free of charge. A record is public unless it's otherwise expressly provided by statute. And so there are generally three categories of records that are considered not public, and we'll talk a little bit about those, but private, those are private and controlled or protected records. So what is a record? Basically, if you look at the definitions under Grandma, just about anything you think of that can be shared with someone in a tangible format is a record. So your emails, your data, maps, photographs, microfiche, faxes, just about anything, recordings are considered a record under Grandma if you can share them in some tangible fashion.
Yeah, you might go back to the list.
Mm-hmm.
It's free.
Well, let me get you a microphone. Yeah, no, you're good. Go ahead.
Through the chair, I'm sorry. It says every person has a right to inspect a public record free of charge. I thought that if you did a Grandma request, it does cost money.
So there are sometimes when we can charge fees. You have the right to inspect a record free of charge. So like if someone wants to see a copy of an agenda and they want to come to the board and visually inspect it, that should be free of charge. But if you're asking for something like, for example, a UPAC report that has student names in it or personal information that may take time to redact, the statute gives us the authority to charge for the time it would take to go through that record and redact information so that it can be accessible to the public.
Sure. Member Carey.
That raises an interesting point. So are we doing that manually? Are we using AI for that redaction process?
I do that manually.
Okay, so you are our AI. Okay, thank you.
I've been called
artificial.
Right. Oh, that's true, Nev.
These are intelligent.
Understood. Thank you.
So when we get when someone asks us for something, we don't, you know, we have to, there are certain circumstances we have to give it, certain circumstances we don't. For a record to be producible, it has to be something that's prepared, owned, received, or retained by a governmental entity or political subdivision. So if somebody comes to the Board of Education and wants to ask for records that belong to the Department of Health, we obviously can't give it to them. We send them to the Department of Health. But if it's something that's prepared by our staff, that's something that we own as an agency or that we've received, or retained through appropriate processes, that's when we produce it. There has to be a legitimate way to provide that as well. A lot of our data that we have in databases isn't necessarily reproducible by photocopy or other means, and so we don't always provide that. Things that are not considered records are your personnel notes, temporary drafts, privately owned documents, copyrighted or patented material, proprietary software, personal calendars, private contact information of individuals are all examples of things that are considered not records. One thing that we get quite frequently is people send in records requests and ask questions like what is happening with an RFP, or they won't necessarily ask for records. They'll ask what the agency is doing about something. That's not considered a records request because they're just asking questions. The other thing is they may ask for something that we don't have in a particular format. We're not required to create a record or to tailor information in order to respond to a records request. That's something that we get a lot of requests for, is people wanting to take our data and change it to a particular fashion to suit their research interests. There are a number of records that we don't provide, like I said earlier. Private records are, there's a number of private records. They generally contain sensitive information like social security numbers, employment records, things like that are considered private. Controlled records are generally medical or psychological records. Protected records are records that are needed for the orderly administration of an agency, usually things like attorney-client privilege documents, records about an RFP that's in progress, or procurement records, records about an investigation in process. Those are all considered protected because releasing them would interfere with some fashion with the orderly administration of government. Student records, of course, are kind of unique to the school system, and they are also restricted. The disclosure of an education record is governed by FERPA under Grandma. So all the FERPA rules still control for education records. The things that come up most often involving board members are emails. All USB emails are preserved by our IT team. State agencies are required to preserve your emails for 7 years with what we call executive correspondence. That would be the superintendency. We keep their emails permanently. The IT staff has their servers set up to retain those records longer because who knows, but 50 years down the line, people will want to see what Superintendent Hart was thinking about an issue. Could be, yeah. There have been a lot of cases that have come up about whether emails have to be provided, and the archives guideline is that state provided emails considered the primary venue for conducting state business. Such business should not be conducted using third party email providers. Emails should be preserved and managed consistent with state records policies and rules. That's why you're all provided with the schools.utah.gov email address, so that we can properly keep track of that and archive that. If for some reason you conduct business with a personal account, the counsel would be to copy USB staff, because then it gets saved in our servers and can be stored properly. But the best advice is just to use your schools.utah.gov email.
Member Davis, let's get you on a microphone just so the public can hear.
I guess I've heard this training several times, but I didn't remember. This is council copy USB staff on USB business. Are we supposed to copy a staff member on every USB business email? And who is that unlucky person?
Only if you're like conducting business on your personal email. So if...
If
you're using your schools.utah.gov email, you're fine. Okay. That only applies if you're using a personal email address. And then if you copy the superintendent because it's a discussion with her, you're fine. Or if you're copying some other staff because it's their area of concentration, that's fine too.
That's why I didn't remember.
Hopefully you're using your agency email and it doesn't come into play. Texting is another question that comes up quite often. That's hard to read, but it's basically a Dear Abby response that came in the government archives newsletter. They basically say that text messages, just like emails, are public records. If you're texting about agency business, that's something that should be retained by the agency. So text messages can be deleted if they're transitory correspondence. So if you're just texting about where to go to lunch or making personal comments, but if it documents a business decision, it may need to be downloaded and kept in a record keeping system for a longer amount of time. So one thing we've had this come up in prior grandma requests, is that if you look at the definition of record, the record has to be prepared, owned, or retained by the agency. And you as board members are in kind of a unique position because you're not employees of the agency. There have been rulings that say you're not. And so it's arguable whether we own your text messages. But the guidance has been that if you're doing public business, that should be transparent. There have been prior rulings on text messages that those are generally going to be considered public if they're done by public officials. And so if you do text on a matter of public business, it's encouraged that you would download those and work with Sybil to save those. I probably should change that to your correct title. Sorry, Sybil. I know that this is a few years old, this presentation, but if your better practice would just be not to do public business over text, but if you are discussing public matters, they should be downloaded and saved.
Looks like we have a question, Member Davis. We'll get your light on. Thank you.
I'll just be really quick. When we had that budgeting reduction exercise, I had a bunch of voicemails from constituents. So is that the same as considered as a text? Would I have been responsible to take that and send them to Sybil and have her keep the archive those and download them somewhere? Or I mean, I still have them, but do I need to do that is my question. It's a lot between full voicemails and texts for that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah. I mean, Joanne said we could be getting hundreds. Okay, thank you.
We always counsel board members to be conscientious about what you say in correspondence with fellow board members and board staff, because under the public records laws, that could easily end up in the news media. Just want to highlight a few things about USB e-grandma requests. The things that we get the most requests for in USB e are procurement results. We get a lot of requests for the scoring and tabulation contracts that result from the RFPs. We get requests for student records, a lot of requests for findings of UPAC and audit investigations. We get requests for your communications or staff communications on a fair amount. And we get some requests for financial records. Utah Fits All is an example where we've gotten a few requests for that kind of thing. We get a lot of requests. This kind of gives you an idea of how many requests we process in a year. This school year to date, we've processed 123 requests. I just got a couple more, so we're up about 125. That's gone up significantly over the last few years. You can see that. I will say, though, that from what I've heard compared to like a school district, this is not a very big number. But it does take a lot of manpower to process at times, depending on what's requested. If someone doesn't like the answer they get from a grandma request, there are appeal avenues. The first avenue is to the superintendent. If someone doesn't like what I tell them in response to a grandma request, they always get a notice that they can appeal to the superintendent. If they don't like the superintendent's decision, they can appeal that to the government records office. This is a new process. They have one individual that decides these grandma appeals for the state. He replaced the records committee that previously handled appeals. And then finally, if people don't like his decisions, their process is to take the appeals through the court process. So that's what appeals look like. Any questions?
It's like Member Longacre has a question.
Do you have a set fee of what you charge for pulling grandma?
So what the statute says, and I lost my mic again. The statute says that we can charge the lowest hourly rate of the employee that can do it. So I usually charge my hourly rate if it's for redacting documents. Sometimes if other people are helping, we look at their hourly rates, and that's how we determine that.
That money, what kind of account does that go into, or fund or line item or whatever you want to call it?
It just goes back into the general fund.
Are those funds unrestricted that we can use?
It's a matter of probably no more than a few thousand a year. Yeah, there's not enough to do anything fun with, or else I'd be taking a cruise.
Okay, do we have any other questions? All right, thank you, Ben. We appreciate your training on the afternoon. Well, with that, we now have concluded item 7. We don't have any unfinished board business, so I will entertain a final motion. We have a motion to adjourn. We have a second. All in favor? Hey, we are adjourned. Thank you.